Well, hello everyone. I mean, I've called it British news. It's really news that concerns everyone: Britain, America, all of Europe, the whole of the so-called collective West. And that is what is really coming in the age of AI. We're going to be talking about some of the tech bros today: Elon Musk, Mark Andreessen, Larry Ellison, and of course the Dark Lord. Or Tony Blair. I've got a feeling this is going to be quite a long video, so strap in. Before we get going, I'll just remind everyone, do buy courses at the academic agency. Trivium, of course, my latest one is Foundations of Shakespeare, buy it now. You know, that is a top level course, and lots of people are doing it, so I encourage you to pick it up. But let us waste no time, because there's quite a lot to get through here. The first thing is that in the news just today, there has been a movement, DeepSeek AI, a Chinese app, has caused global tech shares to tumble because they've been spooked by the fact that China has got this new open AI technology that rivals the American one. And it's causing a bit of panic at the moment. And I thought it was a good moment to take stock of the whole conversation around AI and what I think are convergences between Tony Blair, the Dark Lord's plans or his agenda, if you want, for this country, and what's happening in America as well. In fact, the thing that started me off looking at this was a tweet by Mark Andreessen, the chap that you can see on the left here, who, yes, I know what you're thinking. He's got an extraordinary head, basically. I mean, Mark Andreessen, up until I made this post, followed me on Twitter. And as far as I can tell, he's probably read my stuff on Elite Theory too. But this post, I think, caused him to unfollow me on Twitter, because I essentially counter-signaled. He made this big long post about why AI won't cause unemployment. And his argument, he got out the whole Henry Hazlitt and, economics in one lesson and Bastiat and all these old free market ideas came out again. And I simply said, creative destruction does cause unemployment as per Joseph Schumpeter. And the assumption that labor will reallocate to more productive ends is based on Ricardo's assumption that one, capital stays in the country, and two, labor stays in the country. You can't just cite Hazlitt and Bastiat. Now, rather than respond to that, he just unfollowed me, which is fair enough. He's a billionaire. He can do what he wants. But let me just explain what I was talking about here. So the notion of creative destruction goes back to this economist who was Austrian without being an Austrian economist, even though he was in the same class as Mises. And in his one of his famous works about capitalism, socialism, and democracy, Schumpeter talks about the gale of creative destruction. I'm sure I've got a video in the back catalogue somewhere talking about what is creative destruction. But basically, when there's a new disruptive technology that comes along, whether it's, in textiles or the railways or computers, it creates a big dislocation in jobs, because the new technology renders old technologies obsolete. The market has to adjust, and, it causes mass unemployment. And Schumpeter said that this, in that book, he argues that actually this is a real problem for capitalism, because every time this gale of creative destruction comes along, the resentment it creates through the mass unemployment, coal mines closing down, factories closing down, etc., then creates a new kind of set of people who are disgruntled with the system. And so his argument was that socialism in the long run is inevitable because, partly because of the dislocation and the instability that these waves of mass unemployment cause. He said a lot of other things in that book too, to be fair. Now, what's interesting to me is that this latest one, AI, which is set to be this enormous disruptive technology. I've got a lot of clips lined up from Blair, from Andreessen, from Larry Ellison. Musk is involved as well. What interests me is that they're all talking about this as big as the Industrial Revolution. You may have heard Klaus Schwab talk about the fourth Industrial Revolution. Well, I mean, this is really what they're talking about, is this is the impact of AI. So we'll get more to that in a second. So before we get to all of that, first, what did I mean about Ricardo? So a lot of free trade arguments are based on this graph here, which is David Ricardo's comparative advantage argument. And what he says is that, like, look, if let's say England gets out of wine and into cloth, and Portugal gets out of cloth and into wine, this will create quite a bit of unemployment, as all of the wine vineyards close down in England and all of the cloth factories close down in Portugal. Those, you know, now you've got a bunch of unemployed people, you know, former wine vineyard workers in England and former cloth textiles factory workers in Portugal. So what are you going to do with all of them? And Ricardo says, well, look, if you hold two things as constant, labor and capital, that is, we assume that capital stays within the country and that people don't migrate, go elsewhere, then under those conditions, capital will reallocate to more productive ends. And in this example, the dislocated capital that used to be in wine production in England will move to cloth production. And the same thing will happen in Portugal. You know, the capital will move from cloth to wine. And so now there are new jobs opened up in cloth in England and new jobs opened up in wine in Portugal. So the labor is now reallocated as well to more productive ends. Okay, in a nutshell. Trouble is, in our current global economy, that's just not true, is it? It hasn't been true basically at any time for the past 100 years or more. Capital is not actually stuck within the borders, right? And so when the cloth factory in England closes down, the money does not reallocate elsewhere in England. It might go out. It might go out to China or Mexico or some other place. And the same for Portugal. You know, when the cloth factory closes down in Portugal, the new one, new wine vineyards don't necessarily open up, but maybe they move cloth production to some other country and probably wine production too. Let's say to South America or Africa or some other place where labor is cheaper. So neither of Ricardo's two assumptions hold. So the capital just reallocates to somewhere where it's cheaper, right? It goes to China, it goes to Mexico, it goes to somewhere else. So that's one problem. The second problem is that labor is also not fixed. Labor is mobile. And as we know, this is the age of mass immigration. So on top of the fact that these dislocations create mass unemployment every time they happen, on top of that, rather than those workers moving, those workers do not move, the unemployed ones, you also have the capitalist class bringing in millions of people on top of them. So if you have a look at the history of this country, when Thatcher and friends closed down the coal mines in the 1980s and the factories and financialized Britain's economy from being mainly manufacturing to being post-manufacturing, service-based economy, as they called it, it did create huge swathes of unemployment here in this country. And what did Thatcher do? Well, she smashed the unions, that is the ability of the working classes, now unemployed, to organize. And then on top of that, increased the competition for jobs by importing millions more people. I'm not saying Thatcher herself did that, but that is basically what happened over successive governments. And we all know what the Tories did last time. It was a net immigration was a million people, or near a million people last time. So what has happened? Power has centralized itself, power as represented by the permanent oligarchy the moneyed interests who run the government, okay? They have eliminated a rival castle, namely organized labor movement, and the power, the bargaining power of labor. So they've eliminated that not only by getting rid of their ability to organize, but also by increasing the labor pool, which decreases the bargaining power of each individual laborer. Okay, this is not like difficult stuff. It's basic supply and demand economics, fans. Okay, so to come back to what I said to Andreessen about AI, well, he's talking about the next time this dislocation happens. Okay, so just like the coal mines and the factories close down, AI is also going to have this effect. It's going to create, it's another wave of creative destruction. Only, as we know, him and his friends want to bring in cheap labor from elsewhere. So that's one of the Ricardo's assumptions gone. And as we also know, him and his friends open up, that they do foreign direct investment in other countries, right? They open up things in Mexico, South America, some of them in China, etc. Now, maybe some of Trump's economic nationalist platform, if there's any part of that left where he just says, look, you have to build these things in America, may help that. But that remains to be seen. And I certainly have not seen any of these guys voice support for Bannonite, economic nationalism in that way. So I do not, I don't see really how his arguments about AI not causing unemployment hold. And this will be, as we'll see, a big problem that keeps on coming up when these various different mouthpieces for technology, are interviewed. And I'm going to talk through a number of those clips, for the remainder of this video, as long as it takes. We're going to get through them all. Okay. We're going to start with Blair, then we're going to go to Andreessen, and then we're going to go to Larry Ellison. Now, Larry Ellison, Tony Blair, Elon Musk, and this Andreessen chap are all connected. Not only are they all, very rich men, but Larry Ellison was, up until, on the last time this was checked, the second largest individual shareholder for Musk Tesla in 2022. He is also the single largest donor to Tony Blair's think tank. And, I am also told that Oracle may have been started as a CIA project too. But, these are the important things. There's a link between Ellison, Blair, Musk, and Andreessen is also friends with them all. And, he mentions it. I'm not going to clip it, but in the interview, he talks about how he's in, constant contact with Musk. And, these guys are all mates, okay? He also talks about the fact that in the 90s and the 2000s, he backed successive different presidents. He's pretty open about, where they stand as an elite class, etc. And I respect Andreessen's honesty about that, even if I'm not that keen on the sort of stuff he wants to do. So let's make a start then with a recent interview between Tony Blair and this chap, whose name I forget now. We'll see him. In fact, let's have a look.
I have become a big proponent of technology and the power of technology when it comes to government and this podcast.
In fact, let's have a look at his name. I think his name comes up.
Is the job.
There you go. Jimmy McLaughlin, OBE, the host of Jimmy's Jobs of the Future. And he somehow, I think he's worked with various governments and so on. And Blair was interviewed by this guy. And in fact, I might as well play this, a little meme I made, and then we'll get to some of the stuff on AI and specifically Elon Musk as well.
Of a former prime minister.
And, that's...
So, yeah, if you missed it, you just asked him, what is the job of a former prime minister?
You have become a big proponent of technology and the power of technology when it comes to government. And this podcast is all about jobs of the future. You've written a report recently, AI, unemployment. employment over the next 20 or 25 years. Firstly, how would you define AI? Because in the book you talk about it being sort of one of the most overused and widely used phrases at the moment. How would Tony Blair define AI?
Well, I mean, AI has got many different forms in a way, but essentially what it is the ability to accumulate large amounts of data and to make sense of that data. That's the basic artificial intelligence. But now with generative AI, you can actually take that data and predict what would be the sensible outcome of all that data that you have, so that you start to be able to write briefings and shorten all the process that goes into, particularly that goes into government. And finally, you will get a stage of artificial general intelligence when you will be able to, with all of that data, and remember the vast amount of data that we use has been created in the last decade, you will be able for the machine, as it were, to think for itself and therefore to help devise policy. So you're going to...
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, great. We've got machines devising policies now. Mecha Bentham comes true, eh? Wonderful. I can't wait.
Be able to... It is a transformative thing. And, you know, one of the things that's most challenging about politics is that people live in their own political history and they find it very hard when something as new as this comes, because this is a revolution, right? And I always say this is the 21st century equivalent of the Industrial Revolution. People find this in politics.
It's funny, they all say that. Klaus Schwab says it, he says it, and all of the tech bros say it.
I'm constantly having conversations with politicians saying this is the single biggest thing. Yeah. So the report that you've just mentioned on what is the employment impact of AI, I mean, it's going to be enormous, right? So
it's going to be enormous. Contra Mark Andreessen, who says it's not going to affect unemployment. There is going to be a massive impact. What is it, Tone? What's the big impact going to be?
It should be the thing that occupies government really as its central mission.
Yeah.
Because it can also change the way you do healthcare, the way you do education, the way you do crime fighting, the way you do government. And it's going to transform the private sector. Now, if you sit, as I did just a couple of weeks ago, with a whole range of top CEOs from around the world, and I was at a conference, and I said to them, you know, where would you place artificial intelligence in the top three of your priorities? And virtually all of them said the top.
Yeah.
Not in the top three, the top. Right. So if you've got and this was a broad range of private sector organizations, not just financial companies, but retail sector, tourism. If you've got them all saying that, it's a strange thing if you're going into government and it's kind of something amongst all the other things.
Yeah.
So there's Blair basically saying, like, you know, this should be like the number one priority, the number one concern. Now let's have a look at what he says about Elon Musk. I thought this was particularly interesting because it is the first time, to my knowledge, that Blair has basically said that Elon Musk's agenda is the same as his own, that basically he's got no problem with what Musk is trying to do because it's exactly the same thing as what he's trying to do. Let's listen.
Government can learn from technology and technology innovators. You talk about in the book Elon Musk and how he is a sort of one extraordinary innovator and how he's almost re-engineered, you know, every aspect of cars, technology, and also space travel, etc. What do you make of his appointment by President Trump to the American government?
Well, I think it's very interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens when you know, an irresistible force meets an immovable object.
That may be the first time that Tony Blair has ever quoted Gorilla Monsoon from WWE wrestling.
but you see, everything that we're talking about here at the Institute, because we have this whole program called the Reimagined State, is all about how you use technology to create a state that's probably significantly smaller, but much more strategic. And that's, I think, where things are going, where the citizen is more empowered in its relation, in his or her relationship with the state. And you don't have a situation where you think that every problem is just going to be solved by increasing the power of the state. So, you know, we'll see what happens with the DOGE, I think they're calling it. But they're putting their finger on what I think is the challenge of modern government,
yeah.
Which is how do you make it work more effectively, and how do you use technology to make it work more effectively at a lower cost?
So it's all about increasing the efficiency of the government. Now, Blair's framing was to say, well, we're going to make the state smaller, you know, and that's going to make the individual freer. But I would like to take you back to the John Gray book, False Dawn, where he looks at what happened under Thatcher. And again, it was the elimination of intermediary institutions between the state and the individual. Juvenalian analysis would say, actually, this efficiency drive by Musk and Blair and other people, you know, they frame it as liberation, but what it is actually a greater centralization of power. It is greater centralization under the auspices of making the state smaller, right? And this is something that people find quite difficult to get their heads around, because they think, well, size of state, the bigger the state, the greater the centralization. It's not necessarily the case. What's happening is that we're concentrating power in the hands of smaller and smaller numbers of people, making the central power more efficient and more executive, right? More Schmittian, more decisionist, more absolute, if you want to put it that way. And I'm pretty sure that Bertrand de Juvenel would see this move that these guys are making as absolutely in the main line of power further centralizing itself and the greater fusion of the public and the private, okay, of the it's basically a formalization of the oligarchy, you know, the tech bros and so on, who, you know, run these massive systems. It's basically a fusion between that structure and the state. And if you don't really believe that, let's listen to what Andreessen has to say, where he outlines some of the reasons for doing this, which is opposing China, or, you know, so China is a big on his list of concerns. But let's actually listen to some of the stuff that AI will be able to afford, and keep in mind this question throughout. Okay, is this increasing the autonomy of the individual and reducing the power of the state? On the one hand, i.e., is it becoming more liberal, or is it concentrating the power of the state, centralizing it and making it more efficient and making it more more of a surveillance state, you could say? Okay, listen carefully to what Andreessen says. I'll try to not pause too much while he's talking.
That's the thing. China's got lots of really smart people. They're doing very well in AI. They are, you know, I would say ahead of us in robotics. They are probably neck and neck in AI right now. And they are, you know, absolutely determined to win these competitions. It is the most rational thing in the world for me to, you know, going back to what President Trump said at dinner with us, like, the most rational thing in the world to say America needs to win this fight. Like, America needs to be the dominant technology superpower.
When you write, and you've written, we believe that deceleration of AI will cost lives, deaths that were preventable by the AI that was prevented from existing, is a form of murder. Are you thinking about, like, China when you're writing that? Or are you thinking about the way that AI, you know, in theory, 5-10 years from now could save us in terms of detecting cancer? Is it both? Right. Like, that line has stayed with me ever since you've written it.
Yeah, the easiest domestic example is healthcare. And at least everybody in the biotech world thinks that AI is going to sharply accelerate the process of curing disease. And that's already started to happen. And so that's an obvious case study there. The global version of this is warfare, which is, you know, how have societies like ours fought wars in the past? You know, we send a tremendous number of soldiers into battle and they get killed, right? What is the future of warfare going to be? It seems like it's very clearly going to be based on autonomy, which is AI, right? And you're going to have everything from, fighter jets to submarines, and everything else, tanks that are unmanned. Obviously it's far better to send in unmanned systems than it is to send in pilots and seamen and so forth who are going to get killed.
So droid robot wars. Okay, let's carry on.
And then you see, by the way, the battlefield in Ukraine, right? If you have technological superiority on the battlefield in Ukraine, it means that you have these first-person drones and you've got these, you know, automated piloting systems, and you are dropping in, you know, on top of a tank. You know, the tank costs millions of dollars to build. You drop a $300, you know, drone with some Semtex in it and blow up the tank. Mm-hmm. Right. So, like, you want to be on the, you know, it's a great illustration, you want to be on the side of technology. You know, October 7th, you know, Israel had a technologically powered defensive line, you know, between Israel and Gaza that broke down. One lesson from that is technology by itself won't save you, which, you know, the Chinese have taken to heart. But the other answer to that is that the technology needs to get a lot better. Mm-hmm. Right. And they're in retrospect now that, you know, they're like, the next time something like that happens, God forbid, there ought to be a nationwide drone response system that's able to put an armed response, an armed AI automated response under human control, but like within seconds. I'll give an example. So my partner Ben has funded a pilot program in Las Vegas. The Las Vegas PD now has the ability to put an unarmed drone with a high resolution camera on site at any 911, at the location of any 911 call, any burglary alarm, or any gunshot in Las Vegas. They're able to put a drone on site in 90 seconds.
Oh, brilliant. Sounds like, you're like, oh, great. Okay, drone police now. But, I mean, I grew up playing a game called Deus Ex. Do you remember that game, Deus Ex? And it's like Andreessen has, you know, played that game. And do you remember these? Like the robot police in Deus Ex? You know, literally RoboCop. And, you know, he's looked at that and he's thought, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do that. Are we happy with this? I mean, is this something that you want when you voted for Trump, where you're like, oh, yeah, what I really want is Deus Ex armed robot AI police? You know, I watched The Matrix and I just did it for inspiration. I watched The Matrix and I thought, that's what I want to I want to create this. Are we happy with it? I mean, forget about, like, the efficiency and the, like, I'm just saying that the basic moral question is, this something we want to do? Anyway, let's carry on. Let's hear him out.
Wow.
Right. And that has two consequences. Number one, if something goes wrong, if there's a break-in or, you know, whatever, there's something happening, you know, a carjacking or whatever. Number one, you're going to have instant response. You're going to be able to see it. By the way, the drone can then follow the perpetrator, right? So the guy drives away, the drone follows, right? So you can't get away from these things. And then that means that the police officers are not at danger when they go in blind, because they don't know what's happening, right? And when police encounters go bad and somebody gets shot and killed, a lot of it is because you have a live police officer under stress in a situation that's unclear, where they don't know what they're going into and something goes wrong. So if you have the drone in there, even if the drone doesn't have a weapon on it, you have the visibility such that the police officer will know what to do when they get there. And there's much higher likelihood of things going better and lives being saved. That's one. But two, the deterrent effect. Right. If you know that in Las Vegas, if you shoot somebody, you're going to get caught by a drone, like, you're right, or break into a, you know, 7-Eleven at 2 a.m, you're not going to do it. Right. And so these are.
Yeah. Because these technologies are going to be exclusively used on scumbag criminals who rip off 7-Eleven at 2 a.m, aren't they, Mark? There's no, like, potential to use these technologies for other more sinister purposes, like, for example, making the managerial state way more efficient at policing, you know, let's just say people who have different political ideas from everybody else, or people who don't agree with the direction that things are going, or, you know, thought criminals. Because to me, it's just, I mean, it's not too much of a slippery slope to say, okay, right, well, I support the Deus Ex, I support the Deus Ex robot police guard against 7-Eleven scumbag and against the illegal immigrant. I always said that Blair and friends would use immigration or use quote-unquote right-wing issues or MAGA, or populism as the cover to bring in all of this stuff. And it's happening before our eyes. And because everybody's in this mode of just kind of mindlessly cheering on at the moment, it seems like nobody's asking, like the only people really stopping and asking, like, are we all right with this? Are people who, people who are on the fringes of the discourse, let's just say, because everybody else has been swept up in a wave of euphoria. So they're not really looking at what is actually being said. And the fact that these exact people who are now empowered by the incoming administration are exactly the same people as the Dark Lord. It's just, it's like faces and heels, right? The WEF, Davos, their heels. So when they wanted to do this stuff, we didn't like it. But now it's your own guys. Now it's the Red Hats doing it. They're baby faces. They're the good guys. These are good guys. So we're cool with it. One person who was at the inauguration and the direct link between Blair and all of this is a man called Larry Ellison, who we talked about before. Let's see what he had to say, not only at the White House, but at another event a couple of months back as well. Let's play both of these clips because I think of all the clips I'm going to play, the full dystopian force of what he's saying and the implications of all of this, I think is captured by Ellison, who, to keep on going with the video game references, reminds me of a Mr. House or an Andrew Ryan type. These guys are, they're rich, they're powerful, but they're also kind of utopian. And honestly, they sound kind of insane when you listen to them. So let's listen to Larry Ellison.
Cancer tumors, little fragments of those tumors float around in your blood. So you can do early cancer detection. If you can do it using AI, you can do early cancer detection with a blood test. And using AI to look at the blood test, you can find the cancers that are actually seriously threatening.
And again, the moral question, do you want to just eliminate cancer from the world? Okay. I know people who, have had cancer and passed away and so on. But this, the cycle of life and death is just one of those constants. The only thing constant in life is death and taxes, remember? It's another one of these human constants. Do you want to just eliminate this? Again, it's a moral question. But these are moral questions that people have been asking, going back to the days of Mary Shelley and the Romantics and Frankenstein. It's never stopped. It's never stopped these people from thinking in this way. There's the side of the tech optimists and the side of the tech pessimists, right? But I just don't really see any reason to be that optimistic about the vision that these guys are presenting. And, this is arguably their strongest argument. Oh, yeah, it could cure cancer. Brilliant. Okay. But even in that, I see, a particular problem. We already have a top-heavy society where there are too many old people, right? So now you want to get rid of, probably the number one thing that number one cause of death. I hate to say it, guys, death actually is necessary for the renewal and cycle of society of the species. People need to get old and die sometimes. Is that such a bad thing to say? Who wants to live forever, right? Who wants to live forever? Who was it who said that? Anyway, let's carry on.
The person. So we can, again, cancer diagnosis using AI has the promise of just being a simple blood test. Then beyond that, once we gene sequence that cancer tumor, you can then vaccinate the person, design a vaccine for every individual person to vaccinate them against that cancer.
All right. So Now we're going to develop down to the individual person a specific vaccine that's going to cure everything. Yeah. I mean, do you remember that? I mean, we're in the level of sci-fi here, or sci-fi dystopian. I mean, this is Gattaca, isn't it? Do you remember that Jude Law movie? Brave New World, Gattaca, you know, Matrix, you name it. These guys are moving in that direction, and it seems like there's no voice. There's no voice in the room saying, how about no? How about no? How about we rethink this? No, let's just go full steam ahead. It's always the argument. It's always, let's get on the steam train. Because if we don't, China's going to do it. It's not a motivator. So it's sort of, okay, let China do it. Why is it such a big deal if China do it or don't do it? Anyway, let's carry on.
And you can make that vaccine, that mRNA vaccine, you can make that robotically, again, using AI, in about 48 hours. So imagine early cancer detection, the development of a cancer vaccine for your particular cancer aimed at you, and have that vaccine available in 48 hours. This is the promise of AI and the promise of the future.
I'm kind of reminded that there's a degree of evangelizing, isn't there? This is like evangelical talk. Let's carry on. Another clip of Ellison.
We think we can absolutely lock down schools so that dramatically reduce the case of anyone being on campus that doesn't belong on campus, and immediately alert, the second someone pulls out a gun, immediately alert, use AI cameras to immediately recognize that. But A, we keep everyone off campus that doesn't belong on campus. The police, another thing, body cameras. We completely redesigned body cameras. Our body cameras cost $70. Normal body camera costs, I don't know, $7,000. Our body cameras are simply lenses, two lenses attached to your vest, attached to the smartphone that you're wearing. And we actually take the video that the police officer is, by the way, and the camera is always on. You don't turn it on and off.
Do you guys not see where this is going? Oh, in order to beat China, you have to become China. Maybe even go even one up China. This is something else that Juvenal talks about, the will to further and further centralization to reduce liberty more and more. Because all of these moves, okay, you can put a positive spin on any one of them. But to me, all it just sounds like is, yeah, we're going to create a complete dystopian surveillance state. Okay, he talked about a gunman on campus. But what if it's just somebody who, you know, the AI has decided, you know, has a low social credit score, or, you know, has socially unacceptable views, or something like this? I can just imagine the directions that this can go in. And the fact that there's just nobody saying, like, hold on, do we want to do this? Because to me, like, they're doing it in the name of liberty and freedom, and increasing in autonomy somehow. But to me, it doesn't sound like that at all. To me, it just sounds like the opposite of all of that. Anyway, let's carry on.
And by the way, the way you turn it on, you can't turn it on. I'm going to the bathroom. Oracle, I need 2 minutes to take a bathroom break, and we'll turn it off. The truth is, we don't really turn it off. What we do is, we record it so no one can see it, but no one can get into that recording without a court order. So you get the privacy you requested, but a court order.
Oh, brilliant. So even though, okay, so brilliant, you're spied on. Basically what he's saying is, we spy on you, and if the courts request it, then that recording magically is made available. So we're just going to spy on you all the time.
If you get a court order, we will, you know, judge, you know, can order. I want to look at that. This so-called bathroom break. If there's something, if something comes up, and plus, I'm going to lunch with my friends. Oracle, I need an hour for privacy with lunch with my friends. God bless. We won't listen in unless there's a court order. But it's interesting. And but we transmit the video back to headquarters. So headquarters and AI is constantly monitoring the video. Remember this terrible case in Memphis where the five police officers basically beat to death another a citizen in Memphis? Well, that can't happen because it would be on TV. It'd be on TV at headquarters. Everyone would see it. Your body cams will be transmitting that. The police will be on their best behavior because we're constantly recording, watching, and recording everything that's going on. Citizens will be on their best behavior because.
Oh, great! Brilliant. I mean, can he not hear himself? But this is the exact same thing that Marc Andreessen wants, and Elon Musk wants, and Tony Blair wants. They've all talked about this. They sugarcoat it. Here it is in its rawest form.
As we're constantly recording and reporting everything that's going on. And it's unimpeachable. The cars have cameras on them. We have a squad car here someplace. But those kind of applications using AI, we can use AI, and we're using AI to monitor the video. So if that altercation had occurred, that occurred in Memphis, the chief of police would be immediately notified. It's not people that are looking at those cameras, it's AI that's looking at the cameras. No, you can't do this. It would be like a shooting. That's going to be an event that's immediately, an alarm's going to go off, we're going to have supervision. In other words, every police officer is going to be supervised at all times. And the supervision will, and if there's a problem, AI will report the problem and report it to the appropriate person, whether it's the sheriff or the chief or whomever we need to.
Definitely sounds like increased autonomy to me. Again, I go back. Is this increased centralization, increased concentration of power, or is it increased liberty? Which is how it's being sold by these tech bros when they're talking to the MAGA base and so on. You tell me. Answers on a postcard. Tell me in the chat if you're up for all of this.
Take control of the situation. We have, same thing. We have drones. We just, if there's something going on in a shopping center, and I'll stop. A drone goes out there, get there way faster than a police car. There's no reason for, by the way, high speed chases. You shouldn't have high speed chases between cars. You just have a drone follow the car. I mean, it's very, very simple.
And exactly what Andreessen talked about as well.
New generation of autonomous drones. Spotting forest fires. A drone spots the forest fire, and the drone then drops down and looks around to see if there's a human being near that heat plume, and someone else either had an unattended campfire that caught fire or it's arson. We can detect all of that. That's all done autonomously with AI. All of these are AI applications. So the application.
All right, I think we've heard enough. So, I mean, okay, maybe you could say, well, on the one side, this will save a number of lives that would have died otherwise, whether it's cancer or forest fires or whatever else. But on the other side, to me, what is the cost of all of that? And the cost seems to be you're going to live under 24/7 surveillance at all times, because that's basically what he just said. You get the complete security state. And of course, another part of this, the other part of Blair's vision, which is also Larry Ellison's vision, which is also Elon Musk's vision and Marc Andreessen's vision, is the digital ID, of course, which will then, mean that you're digitally traced through that ID, traceable through that ID. And also, it doesn't, you're surveyed 24/7 as well. So they'd be able to say, oh, well, he made a payment here. He made a payment there. And here's the video of him walking from there to there. You're basically living in the Matrix. It is literally the creation of the Matrix. And the stuff about vaccines he talked about as well. I don't know. Chalk me up as being on the side of the pessimists. I mean, frankly, whether we like it or not, I think this stuff is coming. I think they've decided they're going to go all in on this. I think it's going to happen under Trump. I think it's going to happen under Starmer here. I think it's going to happen in Europe, because these guys, the Davos crowd, Trump, they're all on the same page when it comes to this. Yay! 24/7 surveillance, guys. Can't wait. Anyway, by Foundations of Shakespeare, ladies and gentlemen, God knows what the Tudors or the Stuarts would have done with this technology. And I'll pick up the Trivium, and I'll see you a little bit later for office hours. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just 3 of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.